All right, let's open our Bibles to 2 Chronicles, if you would. Looking at a couple of different series, and one of them I've been looking at the Good Kings of Judah. And that's, to me, an interesting series because when you look at the different kings in the south, of course, their counterpart was Israel in the north during many years. There are several that were said to be good kings, did that which was right in the sight of the Lord. Some of them, more so, was said to have followed after their father David. But if you go according to the standard of at least being said that they did right in the sight of the Lord, then there's 8 out of the 19 in Judah that would have been considered good kings. 6 of them would have been while Israel was their counterpart, and then the last two, Hezekiah and Josiah, would have been after the north had been taken by Assyria. But in working through them, it's interesting to kind of see how when you go from one king to the other, they're mixed together. You may have a bad king doing evil and not following the Lord, and his son may actually be a good king, or vice versa. And sometimes you might see consecutively good or consecutively bad kings. But each of them had, of the good kings, certain struggles. And it's good to kind of look at the positive things and see how they follow the Lord and yet maybe learn from something that stood out that they struggled with. So, for example, Asa, you could say that he had finishing problems. That was, he had difficult in his latter times. Jehoshaphat, there's area of compromise, and that actually rolls into the one I want to look at today. Joash, you might say he had commitment problems. In 2 Chronicles 24, it parallels with 2 Kings chapter 12. Probably be just staying primarily here in 2 Chronicles for a little bit. But just for background, I had kind of brought some scriptures together in a way of it, just typed up a little paragraph to kind of lay the groundwork of what's going on here with this king, Joash, which, by the way, when you compare the different passages, other times it's written Jehoash, so you can see a spelling difference in Kings. But nonetheless, we see in chapter 22 and 23 preceding this, it talks about this wicked daughter of Ahab, Athaliah, who had married Jehoshaphat's son. So you think of the last good king that could be studied would have been Jehoshaphat. Well, his son married Ahab's daughter. And as a result of that, as again, the struggle in Jehoshaphat's life was there was a period of time when he compromised. So even though things were looking good in a lot of ways, the counterpart in the north, Israel, was led by Ahab, which we know with Elijah and all that situation. He and Jezebel, you know, followed Baal, and it's not a good situation. Well, so when Jehoshaphat went along with him and said, sure, I'll join affinity with you. We'll go to battle together. They had a difference of approach when it came to how to interpret that. And Jehoshaphat, he wanted to talk to a man of God. And so anyway, in the end, Ahab was shot with an arrow. He died. Jehoshaphat kept on going. But the results of that, it was these two men, their children married each other. And now that compromise during that period of time, you see in the later generation, was still affecting things. Because then that one, Athaliah, she was married to the king. Well, her husband dies, then her son dies, and she's kind of in waiting. She makes sure then all her grandsons are killed, or at least she thinks she does. So she can take over. Instead of in breaking that line of kings, now there's a queen. And so for 7 years, things are in that situation, not looking very good. But she, unknowingly, there's actually a son left. And so this is the one we're looking at, Joash. So his aunt came along back when these other boys were being, his brothers were being killed, and he's apparently a little baby child, what have you, and he's spared. His aunt takes him along with the nurse and hides him. And then the priest comes along. He says, basically, it's time. Enough's enough. We've been under the rule of this, as she's called in some portions, a wicked woman. And so her background, having been around the worship of Baal and such, there's no telling. Just imagine how it might have been to have lived at that time, those 7 years. But when the priest said, "Time's up, bring in this son, the son of the king," and 7 years old, he begins to reign. And so that's amazing to think about that kind of situation just in and of itself. And the irony of it is, whenever they put her out and she's put to death, she's crying, "Treason, treason." How ironic, after she did what she did to take all the seed royal out. And yet, I was thinking about, well, why is this so significant, looking at the king that would take over? Thinking about how that God had a plan. Even though things looked so bad, so desperate, leadership looked like it was so disarrayed, if we think about it, well, wait a minute, this is the line of Judah. God's word is at stake here. You know, you go from David all the way to Christ, the Messiah, the Davidic covenant. Something, this doesn't work if this daughter of Ahab is, you know, getting rid of all the potential kings. So the Lord, it was, showed himself in control. Here is Joash, and the line of Judah continues king upon king. And so in chapter 24, we see verse 1, "And Joash was 7 years old when he began to reign. He reigned 40 years. So he reigned till he was like 47. Mentions who his mother's name is. Verse 2, "Joash did that which was right in the sight of the Lord all the days of Jehoiada the priest. Jehoiada took for him two wives, and he begat sons and daughters." And so we see the background, talking about how he did right. And so that's the thing we see about several of these kings, how they did right before the Lord. I'm going to flip just briefly over to Isaiah 58 for a couple of verses. Isaiah 58, this prophet will have some things to say that, you know, to kind of ties in with the concept of what we see going on here with Joash. He has a desire to rebuild the house of the Lord. If your finger's still in 2 Chronicles, I'll just read verse 4. "It came to pass after this that Joash was minded to repair the house of the Lord." So this is kind of like a pattern you see different times in the Old Testament, that ones would want to repair, like the breaches of the house of God, or the altar, sometimes you find that term, or the walls, particularly it's mentioned a lot with Nehemiah, that repairing, you know, rebuilding. So, you know, great principles there, revival and rebuilding and spiritual applications there. And so he had a desire, but yet in verse 6 and 7, we see there was a delay over in 2 Chronicles. But with that, I want to read that in Isaiah 58, 11, 12, talking about repairing that which is in need. 58:11 says this, "And the Lord shall guide thee continually, and satisfy thy soul in drought, and make fat thy bones, and thou shalt be like a watered garden, and like a spring of water, whose waters fail not. And they that shall be of thee shall build the old waste places. Thou shalt raise up the foundations of many generations, and thou shalt be called the repairer of the breach, the restorer of paths to dwell in." So, you know, in a way, we can just take application that maybe that's kind of approach that we have. We want to be those that hold fast to what the Lord wants, and try to, in a sense, encourage, rebuild, or sustain the things of the Lord. I think of what, I think it's in Revelation 3, one of the seven churches, when it talked about hold fast to the things that are ready to die that remain. Hold fast to that which is right, and in a sense, don't let them die. Press on with the things that honor the Lord. There in the poetic books, it has a portion that talks about buy the truth and sell it not, I believe in Proverbs. And so anyway, this should be our heart's desire, is to be those that will repair the breaches and be a restorer of the paths to dwell in, when it comes to following the things of the Lord. And so in our text, is 2 Chronicles 24, we see there verse 7. 6 and 7, we see there's a delay in this desire to rebuild. But verse 7 gives a little bit of, after the king has called the priest and and wants to know what's, you know, why isn't it happening? And verse 7, the sons of Athaliah, that wicked woman, had broken up the house of God, and also all the dedicated things of the house of the Lord did they bestow upon Balaam. So again, just thinking back, and here's what had happened. Here's why they're at this situation. And kind of a connected study is one when you go through the Kings and Chronicles, and many times you see the topic of things that were taken out of the house of God. Things like gold and silver and things that were really valuable. And you see it happen many times when you go through Kings and Chronicles. And eventually these things are brought back, you know, in a sense there in Ezra. And there's a time of rebuilding things that had been actually made a mockery by those that were outside of Israel. Things that belonged in the house of God was brought back. And so here you see that one had done so wickedly, and how she had used things from the house of God and bestowed them upon Balaam. What a travesty there, taking the things of God and using them in a idolatrous way. And so with that, verse 8 to 11, we see there's a collection made. The king says, with a commandment, let's get a chest set out here and let's collect such and so on so we can get this done. Well, verses 12 to 14, we see it's accomplished. And so verse 12 reads, and the king and Jehoiada gave it to such as did the work of the services of the house of the Lord, and hired masons and carpenters to repair the house of the Lord, and also such as wrought iron and brass to mend the house of the Lord. So the workmen wrought, and the work was perfected by them, and they set the house of God in his state and strengthened it. And when they had finished it, they brought the rest of the money before the king and Jehoiada, whereof were made vessels for the house of the Lord, even vessels to minister and to offer withal, and spoons and vessels of gold and silver. And they offered burnt offerings in the house of the Lord continually all the days of Jehoiada. So they accomplished this. The house of God, it was set up in state, it says, and strengthened. So, you know, when you think of these stories, in the characters in the Old Testament, you know, if we're reading them as New Testament believers, we can go back and see these stories and see how they're really just illustrating truths for us. So again, may we be those that are restorers and those that repair the breaches, those that want to kind of rebuild where there's a need, and to step in and encourage. So we see from that the story's not over. We see some of the some of the struggles, you might say, here with this good king, with Joash. Verses 15 to 22, after this faithful priest dies, it seems like the king kind of, in a sense, there's a time of, you might say, backslidden. I remember reading one time and studying on this. It's a reminder in a way. It's like, you know, we shouldn't just do something because maybe our favorite speaker, you know, encourages us, or, you know, or because our family wants us to kind of do something. You know, just because this priest died doesn't mean it's time to stop serving the Lord and be a repairer of the breaches. You know, so it's for the Lord's namesake and not because for some person only or what have you. So anyway, regardless of why, there is that acknowledgement that once he died, you see some negative times here, struggles, you might say, in the king's life. And again, he started at 7 years old. He ruled for 40, so he was 47. I guess he's younger than any of us but the twins here whenever he died. And so I thought about Asa, like the first of these good kings. You know, he didn't finish too well. Kind of one of the things with Asa. He did a lot of positive things. But with Joash, you might say he had this commitment problems in a way. But can you imagine, just again, I close with thinking about his background, not making excuses, but kind of trying to get into his mind and his situation a little bit. You think about how he started reigning at 7. Now, if you have kids or grandkids, can you imagine someone on the throne at 7? I mean, and then the things that people are learning and struggling through as a teenager. I mean, and here I'm surely there was people around them giving them all kinds of advice. But can you imagine one of your children running a country at 7 years old? 15 years old. I'm not ready to put these, either one of the twins, in charge of a country. But nonetheless, you also think back, what kind of grandmother he had. I mean, you know, his aunt, surely, I mean, I wonder, I mean, he's going to want to know, you know, what's my family background eventually. Surely he found out what his grandmother did, and he had to kind of, you know, learn through and grow from that, hopefully. But nonetheless, here we find, after there had been this time of the evil queen and the evil king before that, now there's about to be consecutive good kings, at least to a certain degree. Starting with Joash here, four good kings. And my calculation was like over 130 years among their reign. So things can look really bad in society, or you look at government and you say, you know, how bad could it get in the decisions or whatever? But yet the Lord's got a bigger plan. You know, the Lord still brought the Messiah in at the due time. Things went from David to the Lord Jesus in connection with the Davidic covenant, even though there was a lot of ups and downs in between. God